And welcome to the Climate Minute, your source for insight and perspective on global warming news. My name is Ted McIntyre, and this show is for the week of August 18th, 2019. Today we're joined by our co-host, the author and educator, Ms. Mariah Tinger. How are you doing, Ms. Mariah Tinger?
I'm well. How are you, Ted?
Good, 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 good. So, Mariah, there's more news, basically out of Washington, that unfortunately we have to deal with, come to terms with, see what we can do about. One has to do with a clean energy project called Vineyard Wind, which we've mentioned before in the last couple of shows. Over the last few weeks, the Vineyard Wind project, which had been poised to complete all of its financing here during the month of August and then hopefully begin to put turbines into the water sometime before the end of the year, right? Very aggressive schedule. Vineyard Wind was noted for having quite low electricity costs, all good things. A few weeks ago, there started to be rumors coming out of Washington that a much-needed environmental review by something called the Board of Ocean Energy Management. Right? So the Board of Ocean Energy Management is this very good thing established by our last good president, Mr. Obama. The Bureau of Ocean Energy Management tried to survey the coast of the coastal waters of the United States and decide where good wind places were and try to encourage the development of those good wind tracks off the eastern and western seaboard. And so the BOER was a good thing until recently, that as Vineyard Wind approached the final moment of closing its financial contracts and expected to get a environmental impact statement from the Bureau of Ocean Energy Management sometime during this month of August, all of a sudden the BOEM slowed down, started sending hints that it wasn't going to get the thing done, and this past week announced that yes, indeed, the environmental impact statement was delayed for at least 6 or 8 weeks, which basically screws over Vineyard Wind. And you have to look at that and imagine that there's got to be an element of intentionality. Right? There has to be some malice aforethought on the part of the EPA and the BOEM to pull the rug out from underneath Cape Wind at this late date.
Back up a little bit, you said that it really throws off Vineyard Wind. Mm-hmm. I think it might be helpful to just clarify why it's so important that they move forward on this particular timeline. Sorry.
Good point. Correct me if I'm wrong, but the much of the financial success of these big offshore wind turbine projects, much of the financial success depends on employing something called the production tax credit, right, which is a tax credit, basically money that you get for producing clean energy, the PTC. Historically, the PTC, the production tax credit, is basically held up for 2 years and then it closes down and has to be reinitiated every 2 years. So that introduces this perpetual sense of urgency. But it turns out that the production tax credit law will go away in January of 2020. And so if the Vineyard Wind people wanted to get their financial house in order, they need to close, they need to have all the financing done and signed off, we were told, by the end of August in order to take advantage of the production tax credit and have a financially viable project. If they don't get that PTC, which is the production tax credit, if they don't get permission to use that because they haven't got their finances in order, because they don't have the environmental impact statement yet, then the whole house of cards falls apart. It's kind of like buying a house, you know, when you're trying to get the mortgage company and all the people to go into the room and sign off on the closure of the deal, right? If you don't have all the players involved, everything falls apart. And that's what I think they've done here. They know there's a timeline and they're screwing them.
And I think I've also heard it's referred to as an investment tax credit, but it sounds like it's a 12% investment tax credit, or that it basically, it sounds, I think, from my understanding, they can't get that until the project is actually built and running. So
Okay.
there's, right, I think that's the whole, they have to have that done by January, possibly, I think, March 2020. There's something about maybe there's a review window that extends into March 2020, but I don't know how that relates. But at any rate, I think that the key point is that that 12% tax credit is really fundamental to the financing for Vineyards Wind. And if they can't get the project up and running in time to get that tax credit, they can't afford to do the project. So that it really unravels it.
And so right now, of course, the pressure is on to try and find some way that Vineyard Wind can be grandfathered into these tax credits. I mean, whatever they're called, whatever the tax credit that they want to take advantage of, they need to be now, they're going to be delayed past the time when they thought that they would have it, that it would safely meet all the timelines. The tax laws have a end date that you have to be settled, your finances have to be settled in order to take advantage of the tax credit, and all that stuff is up to question. We don't know how. We gave credit to Governor Baker a couple of weeks ago for flying down to Washington to try and resolve this issue. And I think the arrival of the governor to ask for help and to be turned down, I think, again, kind of proves the malice of the, at least to me, I guess I don't want to throw accusations around, but what the Bureau of Ocean Energy Management is saying is that all of a sudden, because there's so much interest in wind turbines, that they want to look at the cumulative effect. That is to say, if there were 10 more Vineyard Winds all built in addition to the current project, what would that cumulative impact be? And so what they're doing is they're holding up the current project to imagine scenarios of what might happen if they built multiple projects in the future. And it's like, fine.
Yeah.
But that's kind of a...
I mean, you know, like, so I certainly appreciate the importance of really thinking long term and looking into making sure, you know, for example, we talked a little bit about Apollo and how that was the Apollo project and it was rushed in some senses and maybe could have been more thoughtful, although I think it was, you know, obviously it was a great program. But point being, I appreciate the perspective of not rushing things just to get them built, but taking the time to do it right and do it thoughtfully and do it in a way that it's going to have good long-term effect. But it's such a stark contrast to see us putting renewable energy projects on hold because we want to find out the cumulative impacts of them on, you know, the environment. While at the same time, we're a lot of the projects to frack and to drill for oil are being fast-tracked, and the environmental impact statements are just being sort of mowed over in order to push these projects through.
They're going to go to the Alaskan National Wildlife Reserve, right? They're going to drill there, right? They're to give everybody a credit. And I don't know if you saw, but there was a thing where somebody wanted to build a gold mine, literally a gold mine in Alaska that would, the tailings from that gold mine would pollute the stream that supports the salmon industry in Alaska. And
which is already under threat because of climate change.
It's already under threat.
Waters are getting too warm for them. So,
and so it turns out, I mean, that I'd have to find the link, but, you know, the guy goes and visits our president in the sacred Oval Office and defiles the Oval Office because 20 minutes later, all of a sudden, the guy's got a permit to put the gold mine into Alaska after a visit to the White House. Anyway, put that aside. I mean, I think the whole question of Vineyard Wind, we need to keep an eye on it. I would give Representative Joe Kennedy credit for speaking up and saying just what you were saying, Mariah, that this is a hypocritical, unfair thing. We need time to call your congressman to support Vineyard Wind. I guess that's and we can certainly hope that Vineyard Wind can find the financing to make this all go over the next few weeks. We'll be following it, right?
Yeah, and you know, so I read something about Cape Air is starting to make these electric planes,
mm-hmm.
and the I think where are they leaving from?
They go from New Bedford to Nantucket, New Bedford and Martha's Vineyard.
Right. So, I think that at some point they're obviously hoping that they will be running on things like, you know, wind energy. And so, you know, I look at the future and think, how great would this be? You know, Martha's Vineyard has, there's all these, this massive amount of wind power coming off of Martha's Vineyard. It's powering these planes, which are just, you know, flying through the air, moving people fast, but completely fossil fuel free. And, you know, that's the vision of the future that we want to see, instead of, you know, nasty chemicals being pumped into the air from air and water from fracking.
Absolutely.
And, you know,
mm-hmm.
all of these things to get planes off the ground and, you know, causing lung problems and all this stuff. I mean,
well, I think that sort of positive view of the future is what we got to hang on to in the face of the other sort of horrific thing that's come up this week, is that the Trump administration wants to basically modify the workings of the Endangered Species Act. Now, if you've ever heard of the Endangered Species Act, that's the one that saved the bald eagle and the grizzly bear, right? These iconic American animals that were near extinction in the 1970s have come back because the Endangered Species Act was enforced, oftentimes with great political battles about it. But we still have the bald eagle, right? The Trump administration apparently wants to change the way the law is interpreted to make it essentially much easier to ignore climate change, the impact of climate change on animals, when you come up with your fracking request, right? You want a permit to go do fracking. Well, they look around, are there any endangered species? Well, okay, we don't have to worry about climate change for those endangered species. You can go ahead and build your fracking well. It's an assault, which again, can only be now, I suppose, changed by either Congress or at the ballot box by putting new people in, and that's what we got to do. But I think, Mariah, to your original point, which is the good one, is that despite all of these ugliness that is being presented to us, we need to hold fast to a vision of the future that is positive, where things are working together, and the kind of thing that we want to see, right?
Absolutely. I mean, and not that I think everything we talk about has to sort of come back to why it matters to us, but I think sometimes people sort of are quick to write off biodiversity. I mean, species extinction is like, well, you know, this, like, I can't care about the polar bear because I'm trying to get, you know, food on my table, or I'm trying to, like, you know, make it day by day, whatever it is. But the truth is that it does affect us, because getting food on your table depends on biodiversity, right? As you were talking about the salmon populations, right? If that food chain breaks down, there are so many people who rely on salmon as a major part of their diet.
And just exactly to your point, I mean, biodiversity, a few bees, right? Okay, the bees go away. Well, that's fine, except that the bees are what pollinates all of the Central Valley of California and the food that we eat, right?
Yeah, we're going to be hand-pollinating like they do in China if we lose our bees.
I mean,
I can't imagine it's fun.
So you're right. I mean, having a clear recognition that when you talk about the loss of, you know, some, I don't know, some slimy slug in the undergrowth of the backwoods somewhere, that somehow this is a thing that you have to stake your life on. Really, what you're speaking about is the whole system that supports clean air, water, and food. That's what the biodiversity is, right? And that's what you got to keep top of mind.
Yeah, and I read Elizabeth Colbert wrote. Elizabeth Colbert is a leading science journalist, and she wrote this book called The Sixth Great Extinction, which I read a couple of years back. It's a fantastic book. She, you know, crosses four continents to document all the different die-offs of species, but it's written really, you know, really beautifully, and it's not as depressing as it might sound. It's a great read. She's talking about this. The sixth great extinction. There have been five major extinction periods, and we are in the sixth, and it's the only one that's been caused by humans. And this one is caused by humans, by pollution and fossil fuels and ocean acidification. And it's pretty stark. It's like, you know, a third of all coral reefs are headed toward extinction. One quarter of all mammals are headed toward extinction. One sixth of all birds are headed to extinction. So we're not talking about, like, maybe losing a handful of species. We're talking about a mass extinction. And that's going to be very hard to continue with life as we know it if we lose that many species. So,
well, and just to follow that point, life as we know it, I mean, I think one of the five previous extinctions was when the dinosaurs died out suddenly, probably due to a meteor, right?
Right.
And so, you know, what comes out the other side of a mass extinction, I mean, it could be that the cockroaches in a couple hundred million years will be running computers, right? Because they'll be the ones that survive the extinction event. Won't be humans, right? It'll be.
I got my money on raccoons.
It'll be very smart raccoons who are. So I mean, it's real. I mean, we can joke, but it's real serious stuff. But back to your point, Mariah, which I think is the right one. Envisioning a positive future is the way to fight your way through this sort of bad times. There will be better times when we, you know, in many ways, I sometimes think that this ugly period of the world we're going through is kind of the labor pains of a new world, and we're kind of midwifing a whole new way of approaching things, right?
Absolutely.
And that when these jokers, we finally realize that these, you know, these people that are running the show now. Anyway, we'll stop.
I agree. That is, you know, just perfectly put. We are creating a new world, and it's got to be ugly before it gets pretty, right? What do they say, that the it's always darkest before
always
the dawn,
dark before,
right?
The dawn. That's right.
There it is.
That's right. Okay, kiddo. Well, thank you. What we'll do is we'll put up links for most of what we talked about. We covered a lot of ground tonight, but it would be on the blog at massclimateaction.org/blog. And, of course, you can find a link to this show at the Facebook page /massclimateaction. You can listen to the show directly on your smartphone using a variety of modern podcast distribution applications, which you can find in the App Store, like Spotify, Podbean, SoundCloud, and, of course, Apple Podcasts. You can send an email to us to complain, cajole, request, critique, or otherwise tell us what you think to podcast@massclimateaction.net. We want to thank our good friend D.R. Tucker for his continuing research support. And we want to close the way we always close, by saying that because we recognize the necessity of personal accountability, because we accept responsibility for building a durable future, because we believe it's our patriotic duty as citizens to speak out, we must insist that the United States transform its energy sector over the next decade under a just and equitable plan, using regulation, investment, and a price on carbon to safeguard our collective future. So, Mariah, thank you for being here and cheering me up.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks, everyone, for being here. We'll talk to you again soon. Bye-bye.
Very cool.